Today's episode is sponsored by Podcorn. Podcorn is a great website that allows podcasters, no matter what the size of your audience is, find brands that are willing to sponsor your episodes. Also, if you're a brand wanting to attract more potential customers, you can easily find podcasters who would love to promote you if they feel like it's a good fit for their listeners. I've had a great experience with Podcorn in my year of podcasting and found many brands that were willing to work with me even when I was just starting out. And don't worry, you absolutely don't give up any rights to your podcast. You can pick the dates that you'd like to advertise on your show and set your own rates. Podcorn is always there to help you if you have any questions at all. Never be too shy to ask any questions. They're extremely nice and helpful. My experience has been an amazing one, and I'm sure yours will be too. Brands can go to podcorn.com/brands, and podcasters can go to podcorn.com/podcasters. Please check out the links in my show notes. Podcasters, you can start getting monetized, and brands, you can start getting paid. So what are you waiting for? Go to podcorn.com to get started, or check the show notes for the links. That's podcorn.com.
This is the Killer Babes Podcast.
I'm Kirby.
And I'm Katie. We are the Killer Babes.
Tell them what we do, Kirby.
We go to places in New England because we are a New England podcast, and we find out what's paranormal, what's spooky,
what's not paranormal.
And we also do true crime.
Yes. Anything that we think is interesting in the New England area. And like Kirby said, we go when we can. We report back what we find. It's a great time, if I do say so myself.
We usually stop for some brews.
Oh,
along
yeah.
with the booze.
Very usually. Check us out. We have season one, and we are in two episodes of season two. So we have a lot of great stuff for you guys to go listen to.
Yes, and check us out on Instagram and Facebook, Killer Babes Podcast, Twitter, Killer Babes Pod, or email us at killerbabespodcast@gmail.com.
This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Come tell me what. Well, I was leaving the house to go get a couple of guys who were going to help me do some work today. Uh-huh. And I was just clearing my windshield. It was real foggy.
Yeah.
And then I had them on high. And I just couldn't see because the glare was so bad.
Yeah.
Which I shouldn't have driven.
Yeah.
I should have waited at the house and said,
What side of the road were they on that you noticed?
I didn't know. I thought I hit a telephone pole. I never saw them.
Welcome to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige. I thought I hit a telephone pole. I shouldn't have driven. I never saw them. This episode is about John Palmer's quest for justice for his wife, Katie Palmer. Who was Katie Palmer? She was a science teacher, a wife, a mother, a friend, a daughter, a loved one. She was compassionate. She was beautiful inside and out, a community leader, and she could be any of us. Katie was only 39 years old and teaching science at Scott Middle School in Denison, Texas. A mother to two children, Brandon, 11 years old, and Bella, 13. She and her loving husband, John Palmer, went together on a walk one morning for the first time ever. John usually sprinted and worked out in the mornings, but this was Katie's first time to join him on a morning walk. Their first early morning walk on April 21st, 2020, would unfortunately be their last. John and Katie were walking around their neighborhood on Glenwood Drive. The sun was just beginning to rise, and it was a little foggy out. A man named Corey Foster had stayed up, hammering whiskey, and decided to get behind the wheel of his pickup truck that morning. While Corey was allegedly intoxicated, John and Katie were enjoying their morning walk when he crossed over to the wrong side of the road and crashed into them. The police were called on at 7:55 that morning about a truck hitting two pedestrians. The officer got to the scene at 8:15 that morning. Corey Foster kept changing his story when he talked to the police officer, Tariff Alkatib, about the time he stopped drinking that night.
Corey, how much did you have to drink?
Nothing.
Last night.
Oh.
I mean, can smell alcohol.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had a couple of whiskeys last night, but about 6 o'clock. 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock?
Yeah.
That was the latest you had them?
I mean, I went to bed early.
Okay. So you had how many last yesterday?
I mean, honestly, I don't know.
Well, I'm smelling it pretty strong coming from the breath today is why I'm asking how late did you stop? How late did you have your last one?
It's 7 o'clock, probably.
7?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you had to guess how many you maybe had, how many would that be?
I mean, over the course of the day, probably 4 or 5.
Okay. Over the entire day yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So when did you say you quit drinking, Corey?
8 or 9 o'clock, okay. I guess. 7? I don't know.
You must have drank a lot last night, though, because it's still going up from there. You're under the limit, but you still have that in your system that many hours later, okay?
Yeah.
The married couple were injured severely. John survived with injuries to his arms and back. He was taken to Texoma Medical Center in Denison by the Denison EMS. Here's John in the back of the ambulance trying to explain what happened right after the crash.
Hey, John, real quick, I know they're getting into you. Where were y'all kind of at in the roadway?
We were right near the grass walking down.
On the north or south side of the road?
Facing going back towards...
Were you walking east towards Highland?
Yeah.
Okay. Were you on the right or left-hand side?
Left-hand side, man. Facing traffic.
Facing traffic. Did he come up from behind you?
He did, man. And he knocked us 30, 40 feet, man. He went too goddamn fast.
Did he say anything to you?
He said that he couldn't see us. He was clearing off the window shield.
Okay.
He didn't see us. Why was he on the other side of the road, man?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. They were right sides of the road.
Well, hey, I'm going to handle him okay. I just wanted to kind of hear what you had to say about it.
A few days later, John was discharged from the hospital. Katie was taken by helicopter to a different hospital in Plano, Texas. She was taken to the medical center of Plano that Tuesday morning after they were hit. Katie didn't make it. She suffered from a crucial head injury and passed away at 1 a.m. Wednesday morning. John said, quote, "She was compassionate, so smart, and such a strong woman. She was a mother and a loving wife." John talked about one of the things he would miss most, saying that it was her laugh. He said that she had this very loud laugh. It was very unique. If you could not find her in a crowd, you could hear her before you could even see her. He said that's one thing that he's going to miss the most. A family who had their lives ripped apart in the matter of seconds from Corey Foster, who even told a police officer he should not have been driving. Corey's excuse was because of the condensation on his windshield. In an interview, John said, quote, "There's not a reason why a 39-year-old woman should be run over at 7:45 in the morning. You feel like half of you is gone, or more than half, the better half. When Corey took his field sobriety test, the officer concluded that he was not under the influence. However, in the footage, you can see him stumble and shake. Corey blamed it on his work boots being unlevel. His breathalyzer test was rising and stopped at a .06. This test was given at 8:50 that morning, almost an hour after the crash. Would it have been higher if the test was given earlier? Corey was not even asked to get his blood tested for alcohol or any other substances. Not only was his blood not tested, but he was driving with guns in the truck.
Two blocks, huh?
Yeah, and I'm not even a Glock fan.
Yeah, take those magazines and stuff.
According to Texas concealed carry laws, you might be able to have a drink while carrying a concealed weapon in Texas, but you certainly cannot be intoxicated. If you are at all impaired, and this includes drugs, or if you're above the legal alcohol limit, it's considered illegal to carry a firearm, even if you are licensed. Corey blew an 06 an hour after he killed someone by crossing over to the wrong side of the road. He never had his blood tested, and he's joking about his guns to the police. Corey never even asked once how John or Katie were doing in the almost 1 hour of Tariff's body cam footage. Corey called John a week after the incident, and John did not pick up the phone. It was nighttime, and Corey left a long voice message, completely wasted, and rambling on about how this has affected his life. The investigators in the case concluded that Corey's drive that morning that killed an innocent woman and injured her husband was due to the sun in his eyes and the condensation on the windshield, the fog, and the glare of the sun. The police report, written by Officer Tariff Alkatib, says, quote, "I began to investigate the crash scene. I observed the pickup had driven on the wrong side of Glenwood Drive and had struck Katie Palmer and John Palmer. The pickup was traveling eastbound on Glenwood Drive when the two were struck. The weather was foggy, and the pickup truck was traveling east into the rising sun when the crash occurred. The driver, Corey Foster, had the odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from his breath when he was speaking to me." Foster admitted to drinking the night prior to the crash and said that he had nothing the day of. "I performed field sobriety tests on Foster, which confirmed that he was not intoxicated. It is in this investigator's opinion that alcohol may or may not have contributed to the crash, with the leading factors being impaired visibility and driving on the wrong side of the road," end quote. I'll get more into his sobriety test a little later. I want to discuss his breathalyzer result. John went before a grand jury in Grayson County. He was there for more than 3 hours trying to get justice for his wife. However, the jury that consisted of 10 people, which was supposed to be 12, one was sick and the other knew Corey, but there were no alternate jurors. This jury came to the decision that Corey Foster was innocent of manslaughter. Assistant District Attorney Carrie Ashmore released this statement following the grand jury's decision. Quote, "The grand jury was provided all of the information we had during 3 hours of testimony, including testimony from the expert we hired and deliberated for an hour. They obviously worked hard on this case and struggled with the decision of whether the facts rose to the level of criminal negligence. That is an enormous responsibility. This is a tragic, horrible incident. I cannot imagine the pain John and his family have endured. Our hearts go out to them," end quote. I don't think anyone can imagine losing a loved one so quickly by someone so reckless. Unless you have been in that situation, you will never know. I don't believe there are enough apologies in the world that can mend John or the family's hearts. No, I don't think you could imagine it. Corey Foster should have never been behind the wheel that morning. Katie should not have lost her life that morning. Children should not have lost their mother. A husband shouldn't have lost his wife. Kids should not have lost their teacher. And a family should not have lost their loved one. Katie Palmer should be here. John still waited for Katie. Weeks after she lost her life, he waited. Quote, "I was still injured. I hurtled up and down our driveway. I was waiting for her to walk back. I was waiting for her to look over. I was waiting for her to come over the hill. I was waiting to see her, waiting for her to come back. She never came back. The only time she came back to our house was in a box." End quote. After the verdict, John said that he was numb and hollow. He said he guessed that is kind of what injustice feels like. Katie's mom, Rhonda Nail, said, quote, "I have to do what I think Katie would do for me or any of us. I owe it to her kids and her husband to be firmly in their corner with them." End quote. Corey Foster was able to slam whiskey possibly all night, drive his truck that morning, and even if the sobriety test didn't reach the illegal limit, that doesn't mean it didn't still impair his driving that morning. When a driver is pulled over by law enforcement in Texas, the officer can request that the driver perform some roadside tests. These standardized field sobriety tests are intended to help the officer determine whether the driver is intoxicated. These tests can be extremely incorrect. Drunk drivers can pass the roadside sobriety test, and sober drivers can fail them. Blowing into a breathalyzer, a .06, is still enough to be buzzed, and that's 50 minutes after the crash. .04 to .06 BAC, feeling of well-being, lower inhibitions, and relaxation. Judgment is slightly impaired. Minor impairment of reasoning and memory, and less cautious. Your behavior can become exaggerated, and emotions, example happiness or sadness, felt more intensely. So, let's say he was at a .06 when he hit the couple. His judgment could have been impaired. He would have been less cautious and too relaxed. An hour earlier, if he even would have blown a .07, that means he would have been impaired. Driving skills such as vision, steering, lane changing, and reaction time would be impaired, along with balance, speech, and hearing. Feelings of euphoria in some people. Self-control and caution are reduced. Riskier behaviors displayed. Judgment, reason, and memory suffer. You are likely to believe that you are functioning better than you really are. A .08 is legally impaired, and it is illegal to drive at this level. He was barely under the limit at 8 in the morning. Listen to what police officer Tariff Alkatib says. This was on his body camera. I'll also have the full 45 minutes of body camera footage in the show description.
He said we were facing traffic, walking east, and he come up from behind them. So he was on the wrong side of the road, too, and hit them. And his left headlight and stuff was hit him, but he's in an F-250. And he said he thought he hit a telephone pole. He's like, I didn't even know what I hit. Because he said my windshield was real misty and stuff and fogged up, and he's driving towards the sun, so... And it crept and crept and crept, and then it got to an 06. I mean, I could smell the smell it when I walked up, you know.
Hey, bud. You guys want to go on the road?
We're not going to.
That was still from last time.
Hey, we got that list.
The officer is clearly shocked and even said he didn't believe his story that he stopped drinking at 7 or 9 the night before. The police report states, quote, "The alcohol in his system could have contributed to the crash or could not have, and was listed as a possible factor on the attached crash report. I believe that Foster was negligent by continuing to drive down the road when he realized that he could not see anything through his windshield. With the weather conditions being foggy, as well as the rising sun glaring through the fog, along with the windshield being covered in condensation, I believe a prudent person should have stopped to clear the windshield before continuing down the road. Taking these factors into consideration, and knowing that Foster continued driving blindly down the road regardless of what he was approaching or what could have been approaching him, I believe shows a clear negligence on his part. This negligence eventually led to the death of Katie Palmer and the injury to her husband John Palmer," end quote. The medical examiner performed an autopsy on Katie, saying the manner of death was an accident and the cause of death was blunt force head injury. The jury still said that Corey Foster was not guilty of manslaughter. Corey Foster has not had to pay any consequences legally for the death of Katie Palmer, which he caused. Corey's wife was also buddy-buddy with Officer Tariff's wife. They were together in October and December of 2019 for certain. Facebook photos of them together have been posted to the Justice for Katie Palmer Facebook page. Could this have factored into why Corey was not given a blood test for alcohol or any other substance, the wives being pretty chummy? Corey was also in photos taken in October at what looks like a Halloween party. More things that happened are posted on the Justice for Katie Facebook group. The picture of a letter sent to DA Brett Smith on December 9th of 2020. From John Palmer to Honorable Brett Smith, Grayson County Justice Center, District Attorney's Office. District Attorney Smith, the purpose of this letter is to inquire what constitutes inappropriate conduct between a prosecutor and an impaneled grand juror. The American Bar Association Standard 3-6.4a states, quote, "The prosecutor should not communicate with the persons the prosecutor knows to be summoned for jury duty or impaneled as jurors before or during trial other than in the lawful conduct of courtroom proceedings. The prosecutor should avoid even the appearance of improper communications with jurors and minimize any out-of-court proximity to or contact with jurors. Where out-of-court contact cannot be avoided, the prosecutor should not communicate about or refer to the specific case," end quote. The Texas Bar Association Rule 3.06b states, quote, "Prior to discharge of the jury from further consideration of a matter, a lawyer connected therewith shall not communicate with or cause another to communicate with anyone he knows to be a member of the veneer from which the jury will be selected, or any juror or alternate juror, except in the course of official proceedings. There should be no extrajudicial communication with veneermen prior to trial or with jurors during trial or on behalf of a lawyer connected with the case," end quote. In this letter, John writes, "If a prosecutor were to invite an impaneled grand juror to his or her home for a social function, would that be acceptable? Would such an action erode the public's perceived impartiality and integrity of the judicial process? I would prefer that you respond to my inquiry in writing so that your words are clear and not misrepresented. I look forward to understanding how you, District Attorney Smith, view this matter and whether you believe that such an action could cause the public to lose confidence in the impartiality and integrity of the judicial process in Grayson County. Your timely response to my inquiry would be appreciated. Regards, John Palmer. The DA signed for this letter on December 16, 2020. Still, no response. February 22nd, someone posted a picture of Carrie Ashmore saying, quote, "This is Carrie Ashmore, Assistant District Attorney in Grayson County. Mr. Ashmore failed to get the grand jury in Grayson County to indict Corey Foster in the death of Katie Palmer. I wanted to share a very important quote that Mr. Ashmore shared with John Palmer, Katie's husband, and Rhonda Nail, Katie's mother. Quote, "When you go against the boss, you go against the house." Carrie Ashmore, Assistant District Attorney in Grayson County. His boss is Brett Smith. February 28, 2021. A post is titled, "Transparency is Honesty." John writes, "I've submitted a total of 14 requests for information to the Grayson County Criminal District Attorney's Office under the Texas Public Information Act, and have received 8 letters totaling over 115 pages. Unfortunately, these 8 letters and 115 pages were also sent to the Texas Attorney General, requesting that the information not be released. All 115 pages were dedicated to suppressing information and not releasing the information. The Grayson County Criminal District Attorney's Office told me that they would allow me to look at any information they had at any time. Apparently, that was false. Brett Smith, why isn't your office transparent? Why are you suppressing information? When the Grayson County Criminal District Attorney's Office appears to have spent more time on suppressing information rather than gathering or collecting it, there is a problem. Grayson County, this is not acceptable." Another post on March the 3rd is titled, "Actions Speak Louder Than Words." Mike Adams worked at the Sherman DPS for over 10 years. Chances are that if you had your license renewed at this location, you probably saw Mike. He didn't work at the counter, but had a desk off to the side, had a big personality, and loved his job. Mike was a close family friend. He was raised with Katie's mom and aunts and was considered family. Mike was recently fired without warning. His egregious offense was that he was critical of DPS and Brett Smith on social media. It was stated in a letter from DPS addressed to Mike that he caused, quote, "undue embarrassment to the department, damaged the reputation of the department, and eroded the public's confidence in the department." Mike would later find out from a DPS agent that came up from Austin to interview him that the complaint originated from the Grayson County Criminal District Attorney's Office. Mike was denied unemployment and has had his pension reduced due to these comments, saying there was shoddy handling of the crime scene. "Buzz driving is drunk driving" is apparently just a stupid, inaccurate slogan. And then he criticized Brett Smith on contributing to, quote, "making this all go away. It was just too much. These were all words, not actions." The actions or inactions of Tariff Alkatib speak louder than any words. Mike wrote that Tariff failed to get a blood test as per the DA, provided the DA with a subpar report, failed to provide adequate pictures of the scene, failed to mark the scene, failed to check Foster's cell phone usage before impact, failed to interview neighbors on the scene, failed to acknowledge the severities of Katie's injuries on the scene. These failures contributed to Corey Foster walking free and not facing criminal charges. If Mike Adams was fired for pointing out Tariff's failures, is Tariff Alkatib going to be fired for completely failing on the scene? Mike Adams was fired and Tariff Alkatib was promoted. The vision statement of the Texas DPS is to, quote, seek continuous improvement in our operations, relationships, and the safety and security of all Texans. DPS leadership, show us this vision by holding Tariff Alkatib accountable. January 9th, 2021, Katie's mom, Rhonda, posted in the group, why is Tariff Alkatib still employed at DPS? This man was willfully negligent on Katie and John Palmer's murder and assault. He wrote up that it was both foggy and sunny, and that his buddy Corey was not intoxicated. He didn't mark the scene, did not talk to witnesses, led Corey in every answer that he gave, and knew full well that Corey Foster is a long-term alcoholic who blew .06 1 hour after he hit them. I will not stop till this man is held accountable for the collusion, cover-up, and gross negligence of his job that day. He turned his body cams off, talked to Corey in the car, assured Corey's mother that everything was fine, and then drove Corey Foster home instead of getting a blood test. Tariff Alkatib, this is not going away. There will be accountability for yours, Foster's, and Brett Smith's actions. We will not stop. When Katie passed away, John learned that his wife was an organ donor. He was still in his bed in ICU when he realized he had a decision to make, and fast. John had no idea that since the pandemic, organ donation has become a little more complicated. There's the usual screen for cancer, HIV, and other diseases. But now, donors had to test negative for COVID, making sure the transplants could be done carefully and safely. With the help of the Southwest Transplant Alliance, John was able to honor his late wife's wishes. Right after John talked to Katie's parents and they confirmed that it was okay, staff of the Southwest Transplant Alliance were able to retrieve Katie's organs over the course of 2 days. With systems in place and a hospital that could handle transplants, Katie's heart, liver, lungs, and kidneys were saved for donation. John said, quote, if there's anything positive that comes from this at all, it's that someone gets what they needed. I'm 100% fine with that. End quote. Sourcing from DallasNews.com, Patty Niles, president and CEO of Southwest Transplant Alliance, said that transplant centers were not sure if they could accept an organ as the pandemic spread. While there is still much that is unknown about COVID-19, it has been found in blood, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And hospitals that were storing up gear to treat patients infected with the coronavirus were initially reluctant to take on transplant patients. As fears about COVID-19 grew, Niall said that hospitals were saying, we don't want you here. They were saying, please don't come. But recovering Katie's organs changed everything. Patty Niles said that it was a game changer. Because they provided safe organs, they were able to continue their mission. Even after Southwest Transplant Alliance had the capability to test potential donors, the organization had to deal with another issue. The transplant procedure was not completely safe in hospitals with COVID-19 patients. The nonprofit required a fully functional hospital with no one infected by COVID-19. Southwest Transplant Alliance found a match with First Baptist Medical Center in Northeast Dallas. John said that he has found some comfort and peace in the life-saving difference that Katie's decision made. Katie was cremated, and social distancing has made things difficult. The family wants to hold a memorial at Austin College, but only when it's safe to do it. Senior year at Austin College may have had some memorable moments for John and Katie, but the best memory of all, that's where the two first met. So, how are John, Brandon, and Bella taking everything? John said that he and the kids were going to have to get through it, and that he knows they will. Something a close family member told John after the organ donation made him feel a lot better. They said that our worst day was someone else's best day. John could not think of a more fitting way for Katie to live on than for her to give one last time. Dustin Bortsfield went to Lake Highlands High with John. John graduated in 1998 and Dustin graduated in 99. They even played on the Wildcat football team together. Back in October of 2020, Dustin, now a firefighter with the Grapevine Fire Department, was hanging Christmas lights for others as a side job, and through Facebook, he had been keeping up with John and Katie's story. He told John that he would hang lights for the family. He hadn't seen John in about 20 years. Dustin said he thought that maybe he could hang Christmas lights for John and his kids and do something for them to brighten their spirits for the holidays, after everything they had gone through that last 6 months. After Dustin hung the lights for the Palmer family, he came up with the idea of the Katie Palmer Project. Dustin said, quote, "Not only did I want to do it for John and his family, but maybe we could come up with a nomination house and call it the Katie House and try to brighten someone else's spirits during their hard time, if they've had a hard year or been through a hardship." Dustin asked other firefighters with the other departments all over Texas if they would participate in the project as well. They practically told him to say no more, that they were in. 6 firefighter contractors got involved in the project. Dustin and John at this time were searching for nominations for anyone that could use some Christmas cheer or Christmas spirit. John said to Dustin, quote, "There's times when you try to look for the beautiful in the world, and you did it. You're doing a great thing." For the season of giving, John said that there was no better way to honor Katie. John said that Katie gave while she was living, that she was a teacher, she was a volunteer, she worked with kids, she was a coach, and when she passed away, she gave again by donating her organs. You can find out more at katiepalmerproject.com. In January of 2021, reported by KXII.com, a Texas state representative filed a bill that would require law enforcement to test a driver's blood for drugs or alcohol if they hit a pedestrian and caused serious injury or death. The House Bill 1287 is named Colton's Law, after Colton Carney, an autistic Roy City man who was hit and killed by a driver while walking to work back in January of 2017. Colton's body was tested for the presence of drugs, but the driver involved in the accident was not tested. Under current Texas law, officers can use their own judgment on whether to test a driver's blood alcohol content when they hit a pedestrian. For John Palmer, he said had Colton's Law been a law at the time, that there would be accountability for the death of his wife. The author of the bill said that members of the Justice for Katie Palmer group have voiced their support for the bill, which accounts not only for fatal accidents, but accidents that cause serious bodily injury. Terry Mesa, the state representative and author of the bill, said, quote, "Her death will not be for naught, that it will come to be part of a bill that's important in the future for the state of Texas. What a beautiful person she was. And not just talking about beauty externally, but a beautiful person inside. What a good person she was, that it makes you want all the more to get justice for her. John Palmer has filed a civil case against Corey Foster. John said that he hopes that this will bring to light more information about Katie's death, which he hopes will convince the district attorney's office to bring the case to a grand jury. I talked to John, and as of March 7th, 2021, he is still going forward with the civil suit, and as soon as I have an update on how that goes, I will let you all know. There is so much evidence that needs to be put in front of an unbiased jury. So keep John Palmer and all of Katie's family in your thoughts during this time, as they have been fighting an uphill battle since the very beginning. I will have all the links in the show notes for the Katie Palmer Project, the Justice for Katie Palmer Facebook group, the Justice for Katie Palmer Facebook page, and the Justice for Katie Palmer Twitter. Please follow and join to get the latest and fastest updates in this case. When I talked to John over the phone, one of the sweetest things John said was that he loved coming home to his wife. He said it wasn't like, oh man, I have to go home. He said that he would come home early from work just to be there with Katie and the kids. Merely hanging out with Katie and the kids was his favorite thing to do. He said they would always pull out chairs in the driveway, lay back, and just hang out. He said that it was perfect. Every little moment spent together, you could tell he really cherished it. He said if someone would have told him that he would not be able to go back to work and things will have to stay like it is right now, forever, that it would have been perfect, and that he would not be able to ask for more than that. John and their children love Katie so much and miss her more than anything in the world. No apologies will ever be enough. They won't settle for money. They want to see this go to court and for all the evidence to be seen and heard. They want and need justice for Katie. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I really hope that Katie's family gets justice for her way sooner than later. Nobody should get killed, and their killer pays no consequences. Considering all the evidence in this case, I find it really sad that Corey Foster was found not guilty. I hope the next time that I have an update, it will be that there was justice for Katie's death and John's injuries. My thoughts, love, and hugs go out to Katie Palmer's family and friends. If you or a loved one are seeking justice and you have things that you want to send to me, case files, etc., you can email me and I would be happy to tell your story or your loved one's story on an episode. My email is reverietruecrime@gmail.com. Until next time, stay safe and take care. I love you guys.